welcome to another episode of Fan and Ball, the show where we talk about fandom, fan culture, and the communities that surround the things we love. My name is Max.
I'm Beth.
I'm Kieran. And
yes, we have a guest, which we usually do.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello?
So Kieran and I are friends.
Ooh, juicy.
Jeez, don't
I know.
So unsure
there's
about
a
it,
lot
Beth.
Of there. I strong-armed like, them yeah. into talking about Kingdom Hearts with me because we were already doing that privately in DMs a lot. So this is just me taking advantage of our very good conversations on Kingdom Hearts. We're talking about Kingdom Hearts. We didn't say that. We're doing Kingdom Hearts. We're doing it.
You know, the thing about Kingdom Hearts is...
What is it?
I've just been having these weird thoughts lately. like, is
you
any
almost,
of this for real
You
or
almost
not?
Made me spit out my tea.
Probably, so Beth, I would say that the odds are that if the person listening to this is generally into podcasts that deal with things like video games and what all, they probably know what Kingdom Hearts is, right?
You know what Kingdom Hearts, for sure. I mean, even I did, and I didn't play it until this calendar year.
Really?
Like at
yeah,
all?
No, I, so my husband loved Kingdom Hearts as a kid and wanted me to play 1, and I hated it. Mm. This was like 2.5 years ago. I hated it so much because I hate the, I still do, hate the controls,
yeah, it's
hate
not
the
good.
Camera.
It's very unresponsive control scheme in the first game compared to everything that came after it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Kingdom Hearts 2 is like so fast. And this isn't like a video game review podcast, but but you know, it's like it's one of those things. Like this is a game that came out in 2002, so like anything more than like 15 years is kind of difficult to go back to in terms
it's
of video
rough.
Games, just because you get so used to modern stuff.
Yeah, dude, I'm playing Persona 3 right now. It's not a easy task, but yeah, so I played...
Kingdom Hearts is important.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts is, like, huge, and I think, so it's a, I mean, like, for, if you don't know, which I wouldn't fault you for not really understanding Kingdom Hearts.
Mm. I wouldn't fault anybody for not understanding yeah. Kingdom Hearts. It's, like, an achievement to actually, like,
yeah.
grasp it.
Kingdom Hearts is, like, the Twin Peaks of video games.
It is.
That's a fair
it
comparison.
Really... That, not the first time I've thought to myself that Tetsuya Nomura and David Lynch would be very
oh my
good
God.
Friends.
Can you imagine?
I'm glad they didn't meet in an elevator.
Oh my
Wow.
If you could do that, like, next time I get asked to, like, if you could have dinner with any 10 people, alive or dead, I'm like, I got two of them, and they can sit next to each other.
The answer is in your heart, Sora.
Stop. Oh, God, I still have nightmares about the freaking the giant appearing in the...
Okay, I'm seeing memes that flash through my head like Terminator vision of the giant from Twin Peaks, but with badly photoshopped Sora hair going, it is happening again.
It is happening again. Every time the fandom was teased about Kingdom Hearts 3 coming out. anyway, so Kingdom Hearts is an action role-playing game. The first one came out in 2002, and in the intervening years, there have been 15 games in the series.
Jesus, really?
Not including DLC, and... That does include remakes, but only because when Kingdom Hearts does a remake, they, like, really do remakes.
They really go hard on remakes.
Like, I haven't played original Kingdom Hearts 2, I've only played like 2.5 remix, whatever.
Those are
call it.
So good, though, to They're be honest.
So, it's so good. But so that one has like a fight with Roxas where the original one doesn't. That one has like a lot of like backstory for, I think Roxas and Axel, a lot more than the first one did. Anyway, so it combines Disney characters and Final Fantasy characters because it is a partnership between Disney and Square Enix, who puts out the Final Fantasy games, as well as Kingdom Hearts original characters, like pretty much the original, the main trio. The main characters in every game are original characters, like Sora, Kairi, Riku, Terra, Aqua, Ventus.
Hey, Macarena.
Stop.
It was cheap. I'm sorry. It was really cheap.
So these games are like super, super popular, super successful. I mean, like, it's so funny because, like, I know so many people who are like big fans of Kingdom Hearts, and I also know so many people who have played all Kingdom Hearts and despise it.
It's very possible to get there. I mean, the game is so complex in terms of its plot and its story structure that unless you are like willing to be here for that, then I can see it being a huge turnoff.
Which I completely am.
It's the Twin Peaks of video games. And we don't just mean that because it's like circuitous and kind of navel-gazy. We mean that because like it is almost needlessly complex.
You gotta want it. Like, you really have to want it if you, like, it's the same as when you get into Twin Peaks, you're like, I have to want to know what's going on with Dale Cooper. I have to want this.
Beth, how old were you when the first Kingdom Hearts game came out?
I was 10.
I was 12.
I was...
How old were you, Kieran?
Wait, what came out in 2002, right?
Yeah. Actually, I was 9.
Hold on, I had to do math.
January 2002.
I was only 11 then.
January 26th, I think.
I was 8.
8. Okay.
I distinctly remember being in 7th grade English and being, I had just got Kingdom Hearts 2. My mom got it for me for my birthday, July 24th, 2002.
Oh.
And I had played Final Fantasy IX prior to this, and I think probably Final Fantasy X, so I was deep bought into Final Fantasy, and I liked Disney well enough. Like, I thought, you know, The Lion King was cool, and I really liked Pixar. So, like, that was huge for me, and I distinctly remember being in my 7th grade English class and writing a feature article about it that was, like...
Oh.
Basically a review of the game that was like, it's not just for kids, it's
it's for teens,
it's mature, you know.
At the wise age of 12.
Yeah, so so wise, like really getting into that video game. I wanted to be a video games journalist when I was a kid. Like, I had subscriptions to EGM and Game Informer and those kinds of things, you know.
I've got some very informative articles for you from about 7 or 8 years ago. When did Gamergate happen? Anyway.
I try my hardest to forget.
Long enough ago.
Yeah. Too recently. I first played the games when I was... I mean, I first played Kingdom Hearts 2 when I was like 26 probably, but I first played all the recent ones this... post being laid off, I was like, well, I might as well dive in. There's nothing holding me back now.
I had time now.
It's a great thing to occupy your time with. That's hours. That's days. Yeah.
Dude, I poured my heart and soul into those games, and that is probably why I care so much about the story now, because it represents hours of post being told that I was an inessential worker, to date this episode. When did you get into it, Kieran?
So I played the first game when, like, I guess around when it came out, because my dad had a PS2, and I remember him, like, I think he rented it from Blockbuster, so I don't think we actually owned the game. Like,
that's such an old-fashioned sentence.
Yes, kids, I rented the game from Blockbuster, because that was a thing that we did back then. So that's when I played. I never actually played it, like, all the way through. I hadn't actually completed a Kingdom Hearts game until, like, I think maybe 2014, I think, whenever Dream Drop Distance came out. That was, like, actually the first Kingdom Hearts game I ever completed, which sounds bonkers because that's so out of order from all of the other, like...
Thing is, though, that, like, that Blockbuster habit sticks with you for a long time. I was when I was a kid, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, so my mom didn't buy me a lot of video games. We rented video games for the most part. And, you know, a 1 week period to have a video game is almost never enough time to complete it, especially if you're a kid and you got to go to school, you got homework and stuff.
Yeah.
And to this day, I don't really finish video games usually. I get, like, to the last act, and then I kind of just stop playing.
I was saying to Beth earlier that, like, I'm really bad at video games, so the only Kingdom Hearts games that I've beaten myself are 2 and Dream Drop Distance, and for the rest of them, the beauty of Kingdom Hearts is that, like, their cutscenes are so, like, vivid and cinematic that there's just movies of them on YouTube, so you can just understand the series if you just watch the cutscenes for
That's how I finished 1. I was like, I refuse to put myself into the world of Kingdom Hearts 1 again, so to YouTube I go.
And they're beautiful. They're like, this is, of course, it's the Final Fantasy company that is known for these, like, amazing leaps and bounds in technology.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm sorry if I don't respond to anything right away because my internet is still doing that thing where it just kind of cuts out every 5 minutes.
NBD. No problem. Cool. So like I said, there are three. Did I say this? There are 3 main titles. There's Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, and 3, which just came out last year.
And that's it. Those are the only games.
Those are the only Kingdom Hearts games. And the other 12 came out in between those. Most of them came out in between 2 and 3, because that's 15 years. So even the interstitial titles, like, do numbers, like... Especially titles like Birth by Sleep or Dream Drop Distance. The remakes did, I'm sure they did really well as well. But because people love, I mean, like, the fans of the, I feel like it's pretty fair to say that the people who are buying every Kingdom Hearts game are not doing it for the gameplay.
No. There's very little discussion on, like, this is one of those video games that, like, if you want to talk about hardcore gaming, it's actually kind of niche in the Kingdom Hearts community. Like, there are a lot of people who will go through the, like, you know, critical mode only, level 1 playthroughs, but it's not, this is like on the other end of the spectrum from Dark Souls, right? Where, like,
oh, for sure,
big sections of the community around the FromSoft games are all about, like, fucking worshiping how difficult these games are, and that's a whole kettle of worms we can get into when we do the fucking FromSoft episode. But, like, that is so not what the Kingdom Hearts discourse is online.
It's just all about the story and the characters, even though sometimes the story just doesn't make any sense. But I hadn't considered this. Super Butter Buns is a video game YouTuber. She's awesome. I really like her Kingdom Hearts videos, but she pointed out in her Kingdom Hearts 3 video, and I had never thought about this before, that Kingdom Hearts is, like, one of the only game series above 9 games where every title matters to the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And they kind of, sometimes they Trojan horse it on you, too. Like, there are games in this series that have the feeling of a side game, but still contain vital information that help to clarify and contextualize, like, main series events. For example, Dream Drop Distance, which you already mentioned, Kieran, feels like a filler arc of a weird anime.
It's also a weird crossover with The World Ends With You.
Yeah.
Which is another Square Enix RPG. So that's interesting. I mean, it's just the only game with those characters in it. I just think that's so interesting that they made that decision.
Well, and you know,
Square had to use the characters that, like, their own characters, more of their own characters, I guess, which is weird considering all of the Final Fantasy games exist. But you know.
Yeah. It's so weird that there were no Final Fantasy characters in 3. That's not the point of this, but, like, it's weird, dude.
Weren't they especially in the DLC, though?
They are in the DLC. They are in Remind. They are not in the vanilla original game, which is just kind of strange. I guess they're just, because there's so many properties. I mean, like, 90%, I would say, like, probably 95% of the worlds in Kingdom Hearts 3 are Pixar. Not just right, Disney, yeah. but Pixar. So I guess they were like trying to really focus on that because.
Well, actually, hold on. I don't want you to get added, which is the only reason I'm going to split hairs about this. Tangled and
Frozen,
and Big Hero 6 and Pirates are all of the Caribbean. Three Disney solo projects, yes, not Pixar.
That's true. I would say okay. So how many worlds are there? I think there's like nine or ten. There's not a lot. Anyway, doesn't matter.
We're kind of sideways getting into like the format of the game, which is like yeah. you go to a Disney world and you go through a plot line that, depending on what game you're in, is either just the story of the movie that this is from or like some side story off of that. But it's all about... Yeah, or it's like
the movie has already happened and then you're helping, I don't know, Jack.
Character in the movie.
Yeah, you're helping you're helping Rapunzel... I don't know. It's just a whole thing. So the games, like I said, each one is like crucial to understanding the overall plot, which is still pretty hard to understand. It's still not easy. I've played 1 most of the way, 2, 3, and Birth by Sleep, and I've watched all of the. I even watched the frickin' movie from Union Cross. I watched that.
Which is a mobile game, we should say.
Yeah, it's a mobile game that came out. It's very strange. Apparently, they haven't updated it in a while, but they're going to
do it. I gave up on
that
so fast, like, literally after a week.
It's had 3 names, I believe.
Yeah, it's Union Cross. Key.
Unchained Key.
And then something else. They're apparently coming out with a new one that's going to be Xehanort's backstory. Whatever. I don't care.
I don't care about that crusty old dude.
I really don't. I'm like,
well,
of
if it's
all
his backstory,
the things...
he won't be a crusty old dude. He'll be like that cute twink.
He'll be Drake Bell. No, it wasn't Drake Bell. 30.
Wow.
Drake Bell was Ericus. I'd like to know more about Ericus. So there's like super heavy character-driven plot. And it's so interwoven.
You don't need to know. I felt like when I was playing it and when I was reading about it for this episode, like, it's so much less important to me to understand the, like, chain of events in the game than it is to understand the relationships between
how
the characters.
Everybody relates to each other. I totally agree. That's what made me, I mean, when I was playing 3, that's what, like, what made me cry was, like, but spoilers for 3, but it's been out for a year, so. Like, when Terra, Aqua, and Ventus got reunited, and Axel, Roxas, and Shion got reunited, like, that, I was, like,
that's
curled up in a...
Oh, I was a mess.
Yeah. Like, there are 18 years worth of character relationships and, you know, like, just plot and story to build on each other for fans to, like... sink their hooks into.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like faction stuff. There's a lot of world building that is delivered to you in a way that makes it easy to imagine your own original characters.
Well, the whole point of the mobile games was literally like,
yeah,
remember that Kingdom Hearts OC you made in middle school? Well, time to live your dream.
Now you're a Keyblade master. Make them. Like, isn't that crazy? Wow, you get to be, you get to have your own, like special Keyblade, and oh my gosh, it's every...
And we put, and they put you in the special thanks for Kingdom Hearts 3's credits, too.
Bro, so. That was, I was so confused when I was watching that, I was like, who are these people? Like, when that happened, oh my gosh. Another, like... In addition to the story, in addition to the new mobile game that they're coming out with this year, supposedly it was supposed to come out in like February or January, whatever. like a week and a half ago, Disney Plus confirmed that they are making a Kingdom Hearts series, which I am fucking excited for. I really am, because I really like The Mandalorian as much as I wanted not to. So I'm super psyched, but that just, like, it, to me, what that says, is that there is enough constant interest in this game series that even over a year after the last major title came out, people, I mean, they've probably been working on it for, they haven't cast, I don't think they've cast, like, in any case. It's happening. I'm super excited for it. I think that speaks to how, like, vocal and strong this fandom is.
Absolutely.
So, to kind of get into maybe some of the nitpicking of the game, which there's a lot to be had on the internet. I don't know if y'all have ever Googled Kingdom Hearts fandom. It's a jungle out there.
Just stay out, man.
But
leave it to the professionals. That's why we do this.
That's why we're here. So I really liked, this was a, I believe this was on a Reddit thread. I'll link it in the show notes. It was super interesting. It was about, like, jigsaw puzzle plot versus kudzu plot, which I don't know if y'all are, like, native to the South, but kudzu is, like, a non-native, an invasive species of vines that, like, choke the life out of trees and stuff like that. It's everywhere in Alabama, which is
grows,
where I'm from.
Like, unbelievably fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, there are fans that say all you have to do is pay attention and keep up with the lore, and you can completely understand what's going on, like a jigsaw puzzle. It might be hard to put together, but once you do, it's super rewarding, and you could see the whole picture. Which I tried to do. I tried, y'all, to understand. It's why I watch all that stuff, and I still kind of don't get it. Others say it's just interwoven. Like, a lot of them say that Nomura had a plan up till 2, and then just kind of said, fuck it.
Let's just do whatever, you know?
Yeah. It's so interwoven and nonsensical that there was never any way to make sense of it, no matter how much information you were given or how much you tried. Like kudzu, like how kudzu is, like, super impossible to, like, get rid of and entangle and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that's an interesting, I thought that was a really interesting thing. Cause, I mean, I still feel like even if you, no matter which way you fall, you still have, like, a pretty, you still buy the games, right?
And, like, yeah, you still play. And you know what's kind of funny is if you break it down to its, like, broadest possible strokes, it's about an evil wizard who wants to live forever. And that's, like, everything else is flavor.
Right.
Wow.
Everything else is just, like, what his plan entails and the way that the people around him either conspire to stop him or accidentally end up playing into his own plans. It's really all comes down to this evil old guy named Zehanort and his plan to harness infinite power so he can live forever.
You Nord
boy. Never heard Kingdom Hearts boiled down that simply.
You did
before.
It. You broke it down to its bare essentials.
I mean, it's almost like doing it a disservice to say that, though, because it the plan is so intricate and there are so many characters that affect each other in so many ways that, like, again, it really doesn't matter. Like, the relationships between characters are what make this thing interesting, and it's why it has so many fans that
yes.
are so active.
Oh, yeah. I don't play Kingdom Hearts for the plot.
Nope, never did. I tried, and then I watched all of 358 Days Over 2, and I was like, oh, no, I care.
We play it so that we can watch, like, Mickey Mouse eat popsicles with, you know, Cloud Strife.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what we're here for. Because it already is, like, a giant crossover fan fiction, so it's, like, begging for it.
Why not?
You know?
Why not? My favorite is Donald saying Sora, it's Sephiroth. I'm not even gonna try to do the voice, but okay, so getting into the history, it's just as complicated as the game itself, but I tried to find the most important things, and one of the biggest things I could find that
we're about to we're about to send some of you on a like memory spiral with just a few words.
You know, in a roller coaster where they stop and then they shoot you backwards?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry about your day. So, okay. 2009, 358 days over two, which is apparently the real way to say it.
It is?
Yes.
That's horrible. I don't like that.
It's written as 358 divided by 2 days, which is already a bad title. But 358 days over two was released for the Nintendo DS in September of 2009, 4 years after Kingdom Hearts 2 came out. So, the marketing for it, as early as, I think, 2007, was talking about how you can play as Roxas, who had just been introduced in Kingdom Hearts 2, fan favorite. He's Sora's nobody.
Played by Jesse McCartney from Seventh Heaven.
You know, played expertly by Jesse McCartney. Listen, I never thought that 11-year-old me listening to Beautiful Souls would have so much to relate to with 27-year-old me caring so much about Jesse McCartney in any case.
I want to let you finish about the Great Flame Wars of 2009, but at some point in this podcast, we have got to talk about the casting of these games because it's inspired. It changed the way video game voice casting was done.
Oh, gosh. The marketing is like, you play as Roxas, you get to learn more about Organization 13. You know, there are scenes with like him, you know, Roxas is going off into Agrabah and he's going off into whatever, Snow White world. Everyone was super psyched. You know, it's just a backstory game, and like, who doesn't love those? Kingdom Hearts fans do. That's what they love, is they love a backstory. In early 2009, as far as I could find, is when the marketing kind of started to give away the fact that they're, the 14th member of Organization 13. There's a 14th member, and that got people all up in arms, because that's not the number 13. And and then even further, she's a girl, and you know, the internet in those days wasn't super kind, so that made people even madder, because this girl looked like she was not like friends with Roxas and Axel, you know, two pre-established characters from 2. And she is friendly with Riku. Like, I watched all the trailers for this game, and they're like, I can see if I were like angry and internalizing misogyny in 2009 and I was a big fan of these games, I would be like, she doesn't even know Riku, why are they talking to, as if they couldn't,
she's not real,
as if they couldn't develop a relationship over this game, but what the fuck ever. It would focus on Roxas, but there's this girl, and I think eventually, maybe a couple months before, they revealed that her name is Shion, and like, whatever, it's just a whole thing. People were crying Mary Sue like as soon as she got revealed, because they were like, and I think it also had footage of her using a keyblade, which,
not even Kairi had used one at that point, so people were like,
Sure that was part of the argument. That was like, you know, Kairi's just sitting at home twiddling her thumbs, and this bitch, sorry, I don't mean to, but I was in fact 17 and on the internet at this time, so I feel like I do have some credence of what people were like. This just like exploded the fandom. Everyone was so mad, because like, she could use a keyblade, she was friends with Riku, she was friends with Roxas and Axel, and so then the game did come out, and yeah, all those things were true, and also she dies at the end. And that was, for some reason, people were like upset that she died.
Not just dies, is like erased, yeah, right?
And
like
Axis
people
don't even remember Axis, her. Yeah. Axel and Roxas forget her entirely, yeah. Which is also a thing in Kingdom Hearts 3 that made me cry. But anyway.
So the big discourse was all about suddenly like her appearance is meaningless, right? Like it doesn't matter that she was there because they forget about her.
I should say she was created from Sora's memories, which when the game comes out, you know, people are like, "Oh, she's literally made from the protagonist." You know, it's just like people will just find anything to complain about.
Yeah.
When it comes to hating women characters, although to be fair, you know, instead of questioning like why Tetsuya Nomura felt the need to create like a super powerful character with no real characteristics beyond the girl, the fandom attacked the character herself.
Yeah.
Which
is like a huge, it's a weird decision because it sort of implies that the characters have an agency that is separate from the hand of the author.
Right.
Which is, I mean, you could certainly make an argument like death of the author and what all, but like if we're talking about the text as authored by a team, and to a degree Nomura brings this upon himself by playing into that kind of stepping into that like air quotes auteur role, yeah, when it comes to this, even though it takes like literally hundreds of peoples to make these gigantic games, so there's an element of like, we are angry at you, Shion, and not angry at the guy who made us care about you and then threw you away, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though, like, to say that he threw Shion away is kind of, like, really boiling down, like, the narrative importance of this character a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and then she came back in Kingdom Hearts 3 and people were pissed about that, even in 2019. So, nothing.
Yo, but that is the kind of storytelling, like, drama bomb that I go absolutely apeshit for, though.
I lost my mind.
Twist real. That knife. I want, hurt me, all right? That's what I want.
Yeah, oh my gosh. It was, so.
I was actually just about to say that there are people that are still, like, mad in exactly the same way about Shion, like, now. Yeah. Like, about, yeah, like, driving Axel and Roxas apart or whatever. It's like,
yeah, and that's
truly
like
the levels of misogyny.
I was like, come on, y'all, like, I mean, and like, yes, 2009 was a different time, but even today, it's like they're all not real. That's just my whole, like, I'm like, they're
don't
not
get me started, man. You already know my opinions on all of that.
Like,
and sure, please. That's why you're here.
Well, that's true. I mean, about like in general, that like characters aren't real and nobody needs to get their panties in a twist like that badly about.
And you own them to a degree, right? Like, as a fan who has an experience with and an attachment to these characters, you have a degree of ownership over this. Like,
oh yeah,
you,
yeah.
Like, especially because there was so much like time between the games, like people made these like huge fan fictions and all these theories about what was going to happen between like Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts 3. Like, I know that's when I got like really hardcore into the fandom, was so like after Dream Drop, and I was getting really into all these theories of what people thought was going to happen in, mm-hmm, Kingdom Hearts 3, and making these huge arcs with the characters. So they really owned the characters, like you said, and like basically developed them themselves. And then I think there was also like a lot of anger that resulted in, like, I don't know, people thought that Tetsuya Nomura could like read their minds, and they're like, well, wait, why didn't you, yeah, why didn't you make your characters exactly like I wrote them in my fan fiction?
Yeah.
That's the weird thing about that kind of fan ownership from my perspective, which is that like you as a reader and as a fan have a degree of ownership over your impression of a character. But the author and the team that bring those characters to life in whatever media property we're talking about, they're the ones who have final say over what happens in their version of it. And I think people, there's a step before realizing that like your interpretation is as valid as the creator's. There's a step where like you feel like your interpretation is somehow more valid, or there's this idea that there are like degrees of validity, right? Where like the creator's interpretation is more valid, or my interpretation is more valid, where that, you know, there's another step on the continuum that you can get to And I hope I'm not trying to making myself sound like I'm saying, well, I'm so much more evolved than you, fans out there. But like, there, you can have both, right? You can have an interpretation of your character that you feel is valid, and also there's the like quote unquote canon interpretation of that character that you can see as valid as well.
Right. It always kind of. Oh wait, sorry, Beth. You go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, it kind of felt like, to me, like, this is just how I consume media, I guess, basically, is, like, so I'll have my version of whatever character or whatever, and especially in media series where there are, like, sequels or different installations, so, and then it's just kind of, like, the next installation comes out, and I'm like, well, if it doesn't match up to what I had in my head, then, like, that's fine. I'll just cherry-pick the pieces that I like, and I'll throw away the ones that I don't like. And I move on with my life because it's not that big of a deal anyway. I'm
having such powerful Star Wars flashbacks right now.
Oh, God. I was having a conversation, actually the same conversation that, like, spurred me to, like, make this podcast in the first place. But I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who is 30. She's, like, at least 8 or 9 years older than me. And we were talking about Sirius and Remus. And she was saying, and I mentioned something about how, like, I was, like, disappointed that it hadn't happened, but not surprised. And she said, see, that's so interesting to me. She's like, because when we were shipping Sirius and Remus in, like, 2003, none of us had any delusions that it would happen, and we also did not care.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, so interesting. She was like, we never care. And, I mean, this, I think this may be also, she's a lesbian, and then she hung out with a lot of, you know, like, queer Harry Potter fans in that era. But I think that kind of speaks to maybe some older fandom versus, like, newer, kind of like the new guard who get really upset when, yeah, like, these things don't happen. And sometimes, I mean, like, sometimes I get that because, like, sometimes it's, like, I don't want to throw around queer baiting, but sometimes it is like that, or sometimes it is like, oh, these characters, like, you were building this up to nothing. So, like, what was all of that story about? But I do think it's really interesting that there seems to be kind of a divide that I've seen anyway. And yeah, I mean, like, for, like, now, I mean, I really wanted Jack and Elizabeth to get together in Pirates of the Caribbean 3 when I was 13, but, and I was upset when it didn't happen, but I also wrote a huge ass fan fiction about it, and I was like, cool.
There it is. It happened now.
Like, yep. I was like, awesome. This is, like, I much prefer this version, and that's kind of, like, yeah, I feel like that Kingdom Hearts kind of engenders that kind of creator-createe relationship.
You know what's really funny is that talking about Pirates of the Caribbean is actually not off topic for the subject of Kingdom Hearts.
Why did it? No, y'all.
Was 13-year-old Beth disappointed when they didn't kiss?
Yes!
In the Kingdom Hearts world?
I was just about to say, I was, like, really bummed. I was like, man, I didn't think I cared about this anymore, but clearly I do, because
they had another chance and they missed it again.
I was like, God, when Will is dying and Jack, like, pulls her back, I was like, yes. Like, yes. And I can like this because it's not technically Johnny Depp. Anyway, I have some. Talk to me about Pirates of the Caribbean at some point. I will.
They're good movies.
Lose my fucking mind.
I have watched the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie recently in, like, 2017. It's a good flick. Y'all.
I watched it earlier this year, and I was like, "Damn, this movie slaps!"
It whips. It's, like, so good. I'm sorry. I don't mean to encourage this, but, like,
this is the Pirates of the Caribbean.
This is the Pirates of the Caribbean podcast. Anyway, so just briefly talking about the wait for Kingdom Hearts 3 was also,
yes, please,
in itself, like, a big
it was terrible
thing in the fandom, because, like, when every new, as far as I understand it from, like, watching videos and, like, reading up for this episode, every new game was thought to be Kingdom Hearts 3 until proven otherwise. Like, before, when they announced they were coming out with a new game, everyone would be like, it's 3. It's time for 3. We're going to get 3. It's
finally happening.
Didn't yep. happen because they were going to do it on the Unreal Engine, which I don't think was made until 2015. I don't know.
Like the newer version, I think.
Yeah.
Four versions of the Unreal Engine now.
Yes. Right. Yes. Exactly. Which is the Final Fantasy 13. I don't remember. In any case, it came out in the beginning of 2019, which was 14 years after Kingdom Hearts 2, but only 4 years after the last game that had an original story, which was Union Cross, that mobile game that we talked about. It got put off like 3 times, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm.
At least.
I'm like 99% sure that the original release date was 2017, and they just kept pushing the date back.
We were all kind of shocked, at least I was, that it was coming out. Like, when it was announced for the beginning of 2019, I was like, January, huh? See you in April, you know? Like, there's no way.
It didn't feel real. And then it came out, and I was like, what do you mean?
Well,
like,
hold on, it's here?
It's pardon me? Like, I can play this game now?
I can go buy it? Surely you jest. There's no way.
So, like, in the meantime, people found, like, anything to argue about with regards to Kingdom Hearts 3. Just found anything, the battle system, the graphics from the trailers that would come out, the story that seemed like the trailers were telling, the inclusion or exclusion of certain characters.
From a certain perspective, it is kind of unbelievable that we got, in 2 years, Kingdom Hearts 3 and then Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Right?
It's kind of huge. Like, if I were to go back and tell myself in 2018, like...
I found some things from 2017 that were talking about the remake, which I guess I wasn't really in those circles.
Beth, it was announced in 2015. Yeah,
that is insane to me. That
yeah.
But, so, these arguments and, like, just the waiting time, just people get angry when they're, like... What is it, that Breakfast Club quote, nothing to do when you're trapped in a vacancy? Like, this just exacerbated the divide between people who only played the main titles and people who said that you had to play every title. The purists thought the other side were fake fans, and the other side thought the purists were being elitist and all this stuff, and obviously neither one of them is correct. You would be more confused if you hadn't played every game, but it's also not, like, the worst thing in the world. My husband did not know who Aqua was.
Well, that's a damn shame.
When he played Kingdom Hearts 3. And which is wild to me, because when I was playing, I played Birth by Sleep before I played 3. And when I was playing 3, I told him, I was like, Birth by Sleep is, like, essential to understanding this game. And he was like, I know. I understand that now. So that was just a thing that, you know. And then Kingdom Hearts 3 came out and people were still mad. It's just a thing.
Kingdom Hearts fans are always mad. Just, that's the crux just, of the fandom. We're just always mad.
Default position.
Like the whole... So,
that's my secret, yeah.
And it's like, you put the Sora hair on him, got a Keyblade sticking up into the panel.
Oh my gosh. And I read, okay, this section, I have to credit to this Medium article I found by someone called Woodaba. So I have to credit it to them, but I really like it. So Remind came out earlier this year in January. It was kind of an addition to the end of Kingdom Hearts 3. And it had a lot of new story. And how long was it? It was like 10 or so hours.
If you watch all the cutscenes.
Yes.
But like, I cannot imagine the person who plays Kingdom Hearts and skips cutscenes. Like,
no way.
Who,
dude.
You playing it for the combat system? Like. Who are you?
Yeah. I have a friend who was like, they're like a huge Kingdom Hearts fan, but they were like, oh, I replayed Kingdom Hearts 2 and it only took me like 12 hours. And I was like, even if you were replaying, why wouldn't you want to like experience all of that again? In any case.
there's a certain perspective. I mean, if you've already played Kingdom Hearts 2 and you just want to get to like some of the late game stuff, that early game like there was a huge controversy about the first 2 hours of Kingdom Hearts 2 when it came out.
Yeah, because that's just Joel Roxas.
Because if you hadn't played the intervening games, you're lost. You have no idea what's going on. Who's this blonde kid? Why is the shithead from Final Fantasy VIII hectoring me so much? And I understood that completely because I played 45 minutes of Chain of Memories and was like, this absolutely
I
sucks.
I refuse.
This is like the worst video game I've ever played at the time. And I put it down and I stopped. And then I picked up Kingdom Hearts 2 and I was part of the Who the Fuck is Roxas Brigade.
One of my first things that I said out loud while I was playing Kingdom Hearts 2 was, why did Sora get a haircut?
Dude, right?
I was like, oh, it's Traverse Town, even though it so clearly is not Traverse Town. And then I was like, why did Sora get a haircut? Oh. In any case, little did I know, I would grow to love that boy. Remind is a Kingdom Hearts 3D DLC. It came out earlier this year, and in it, and you kind of see this in the hidden final cutscene in the original Kingdom Hearts 3. You see this guy that is in a video game that kind of looks like Final Fantasy, like 13 and 15.
Can I share with you some backstory shit here? So this. Like, y'all know about Final Fantasy 15, yeah. Right?
Generally.
The gays go
generally crazy. I'm sure you have understood Final Fantasy 15. Yes. The development history of Final Fantasy 15 is so complex and storied. It started as a game called Final Fantasy Versus 13, which was led by Tetsuya Nomura. For one reason or another, they cut funding and eventually moved him off the project entirely. And then they changed the title to Final Fantasy 15, scrapped almost everything that Nomura had done, and started over, basically keeping some of his scenario ideas and character names. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got Final Fantasy 15. All of the stuff that he planned out for Versus 13 ended up kind of getting the sideways spotlight in Kingdom Hearts 3, including this character who matches the design of his original protagonist for Versus 13. Mm.
So wait, Nomura was just going to like bonkers. Make another game with a protagonist that looks like a bastardized love child of Sora and Riku?
Yes. He was. And I don't know whether it's, I don't know why they did this, because Nomura has been Square's like golden child since basically Final Fantasy X. Like everything that he has done for them has been such a gigantic success. And again, I'm reducing the efforts of the teams that go into these because, like I said, there's hundreds and hundreds of people that work on these things. It's not just Tetsuya Nomura.
Isn't he famous for, he always gets the last say, right? Like everything runs by him.
Yeah. He's one of those auteur types that tends to take credit for and also like have a very strong hand on the wheel. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the full story behind the transition from Versus 13 to 15, but everything that got lost in that translation eventually became this character that you're warming up to talk to right now.
That's so interesting. I had no idea. In the middle of Kingdom Hearts 3, there's like a trailer of a video game that looks like so Final Fantasy, it's unreal. And I was actually very angry because I was like, did I pay $60 for this game to get a trailer in the middle of my game? But no, it's in the Toy Story world, which is so funny to me because that's how Toy Story, I think, 1 begins, is there's a trailer for a toy or something.
Yeah, it's a commercial for
Buzz Lightyear. Yeah. So I thought that was a super cute little addition, but in the Toy Story world, they're like, everyone's obsessed with this video game. There's a store in the Toy Store that like basically only sells copies of this video game. It's insane. You can actually like do like a little combat mini game, or is it a racing game? I didn't play it. inside that world. And it's called Verum Rex, which means True King. And the main character, which when Rex, the dinosaur, sees Sora, thinks he's the main character, whose name is Yozora. And Yozora looks like Riku, has Sora's name. Like, he's essentially a mid-2000s Kingdom Hearts OC. He has had a...
Are you aware of the, like, the naming stuff going on there, too? It's not just that he sounds like Sora. Sora is Japanese, is in Japanese, can be understood to mean sky, and Yozora can be said to understood the night sky.
I hate it. Oh my god, that's so...
God, he's just evil. Ah,
I love these games so much. he dresses like a straight up, like, emo version of both of them. They're Kingdom Hearts 3, there's some plaid in there, he has heterochromia, like every OC ever. And he's...
It's cool.
It's dope as hell, I would even go so far as to say. He's also super powerful. In Remind, you fight him, and he beats you. Because...
And his attacks have incredibly cool-looking effects also.
Yeah, I skipped all the battles when I was watching it, so I actually don't know. But I did.
I suck and haven't even watched Remind, just because, like, I've kind of been out of the Kingdom Hearts fandom for a while, because, like, 3 came out and I was like, okay, I'm gonna observe what happened here, because I've been waiting for 5 years for this game now. So
the weird thing is that all of the gameplay in Remind is boss fights.
Yeah, it
that's,
is.
That's literally it. It's cutscene boss fight, that's cutscene so boss weird. Fight, and there's no...
You paid $30 for
I know,
some
that's,
boss fights?
That is one of the things that...
Thanks, Square
Watch
Enix.
It on the YouTube. Yeah, for real. So he defeats Sora and takes his Keyblade after he beats him. He's also, I think he's voiced by one of the Sprouse twins, which, cool, I
Wait,
guess.
Really? Hold up, hold
fucking
up.
Fucking kid.
No, he's voiced by either Dylan or Cole. I don't know which
I'm
one.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Oh my god. Oh, I hope it's Cole.
It's Dylan.
That would be so fucking funny.
Holy shit.
Oh, all right. Still funny. Still really funny.
They if Kingdom Hearts 4 doesn't come out and Yozora doesn't say, "Honey, you missed Auburn big time. I'm going to sue Disney."
Does it feel to y'all like Disney has been, like, pulling their thumb off the Kingdom Hearts scale?
See, I was thinking that about like, I guess the Square Enix properties, just because there was nothing. Although, because Final Fantasy Remake is like the combat system is so Kingdom Hearts.
It is extremely, but it's like it is different. I just got it. I tore myself away from it to come record this podcast. And there are striking similarities, but it also, like, is differentiating itself. But clearly, lessons were learned in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah. But
I'm sorry, I totally derailed you from talking about the ending where Yozora does the fan fiction thing of beating Sora and taking his keyblade.
Yes. Apparently, and I'm only speaking from my research because I was not super involved, but this was a big, like, thing, like, on the roleplay boards back in the day and in, like, DeviantArt and stuff. If your OC fought Sora, he would beat him. He would either beat him and take his, like, power, or he would save him, both of which Yozora does. In there's apparently two endings to this fight. Then Yozora wakes up in the back of a car, and it's so interesting. So this Medium article, I thought it was so fascinating. This is a quote from it. Yozora is the idealized fanfiction self-insert self of this boy. He didn't defeat Sora. He just imagined a better, stronger version of himself doing it. The story of that clash hasn't been written yet, doesn't exist outside his head. This could also be why the fight has two endings. The boy is still working out all the details. I love that. I think that's so cool and interesting. And it's similar to the Whispers of Fate that we talked about for the Final Fantasy VII Remake. I feel like it's really similar to that. I don't know if it was intentional. I wasn't really reading into it when I watched it, but I do really like this interpretation.
I think it's easy to say, and like, I don't want to play like mind reader over here, but I don't think it would be too far off base to suggest that this is just something that's been weighing on Nomura personally and his team. This idea of death of the author presented as a like, as an in fiction force, the idea that like we are legitimizing the fandom as a way of giving back. That's maybe one interpretation of it. Like your support. And that's a very like, not to be like, Mr. You know, I'm so culturally knowledgeable, but that's a very, you know, a Japanese ideal of like, we recognize that your support is vital to our business and our company's success. Much more so than like you tend to see over here in the States.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so interesting. Another quote that I just really liked from the article is, to me, Yozora's dialogue is fodder for fanfiction more than anything else. What strange world has he fallen into? What trials did he face? Why not wait for the next game to answer those questions? Why not answer them yourself? Remind the through the design of Yozora and the construction of this final scene says there's no reason why the next Kingdom Hearts story, the next Versus epic, can't be yours. So cool. Such an interesting read of that. And I would love to, I can't wait for the next original story game that's not about Xehanort to come out to see if that's, like, true. Anyway, I just thought that was a super cool reading.
What could it possibly be about?
I can't fathom right? like, it, what, actually. Like, I just, Xehanort I don't know, I've so, been so, like, caught up in the story of this evil guy who wants to live forever that I don't know. What is Kingdom Hearts about?
I don't know if I mentioned this. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I had a friend who like knows about Kingdom Hearts and understands some of the broad strokes, but is not super involved in it. And when I told her that Kingdom Hearts 3 finally came out, she jokingly was like, "Oh, so let me guess, this is the one where Xehanort time travels and then teams up with versions of himself from across time to beat Sora, right?"
That's
and
I was
like,
"Yes,
yeah, that's exactly what it is, actually."
You got it. You got it in one.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Jeez.
I love to hear that from people who don't know what Kingdom Hearts is about. And like, I don't know, one time I started Kingdom Hearts 2 over from the beginning, and I like sat my fiance down and like made her watch me play it, and I got her like reactions to like the characters, because they're just once you get really into Kingdom Hearts, you don't realize like how ridiculous all of these people are, especially like the organization, because they're just
absolutely
all
not
ridiculous. So I had her reactions to them and like a note on my phone, and it was just hysterical.
My favorite guy is
if you don't
like,
say Demix.
Come on.
No. I don't like Demix.
Okay,
very
call ended. No! Goodbye. I'm leaving your podcast. We're done.
I'm just I'm traumatized from that one
you
boss
gotta
fight
get over
that's
it,
extremely
Max.
Tough.
He's amazing.
I was about to say the guy who's named after a Las Vegas casino.
Luxord?
Who looks like a cross between? Yeah, he looks like a cross between someone from NSYNC and like Chris
that is
Angel.
A very
basically,
good description.
With like a with Guy Fieri's mustache.
When he shows up in the Tangled world, I was like,
yes.
I was like, I've never been more aware of how like there is no reason for them to look like
none.
This.
None.
I was like, oh my, you and like. When like not Luxord. Oh shoot, I was thinking of Marluxia.
Saix.
What's her name?
Larxene?
What's her name? The girl with the Larxene. When she shows up in Frozen, I'm like, you're not supposed to
who's
be.
Who's the one? Wait, who's the one who shows up anyway. In the Pirates of the Caribbean world? Because that whenever Kingdom Hearts does
that's
the Pirates
Luxord.
World,
that's Luxord.
They're always like they're true to the movies. So they're very hyper realistic, and so everybody looks
standing
really
standing next
weird.
To like real people. Dude, in Kingdom Hearts 2, when Sora is standing next to like Elizabeth, I was like, I was like, I have to stop. I have to stop playing this game.
Those worlds and the Tron world
oh
in Dream Drop Distance.
The Tron.
Yeah.
The Tron world. Oh my gosh, gosh, what a world to pick for a Disney video game, in any case. So, those are, like, those are some fan things. Those are some stuff. Good lord. So, this, because, like, with any character-heavy, series or show or movie, this, there's a lot of ships.
Yay!
Shipping. There's a lot of
fun
stuff.
Time.
Yeah, this is, yeah, this is why we're all here.
I have opinions.
Fun, I didn't,
on things.
I have opinions. Matt, oh, your birthday is July 24th, you said?
True.
So, I was talking to Kieran, like, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and I found out that my birthday is the, shipping day for Xemnas.
So, sorry, like, in Kingdom Hearts, yeah, so they have, like, because all the organization members have numbers, so,
yes,
from 1 to 14, so you can have days,
oh,
where you celebrate a pairing based on their number.
So, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but Axel and Roxas is 8/13, so it's August 13th. My birthday is November 1st, and that's Larxene and Xemnas, which I don't like.
No, that's bad.
don't like that at all.
No offense to any of you out there who might ship it, I guess.
So let me, if we're going to do -724, so I'll call that a polygule, and it is Marluxia and some Seeker of Darkness and Zigbar, which I have no
Okay, wait, Marluxia and Zigbar is like, I follow somebody who ships that, actually.
There's somebody who ships every combination of the of organization.
He's the sharpshooter guy.
Is that the man with, oh, ugh, I don't like him.
He's fun. I think I'm fine.
I like Marluxia, though. Marluxia's kind of cool.
My favorites are, I think Zigbar is fine. I love Demix. I think Zexion is fun.
Who's the one with the big, with the spears?
Zaldin. He's like the big with the dreads.
I remember that. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
he's a big boy.
I don't feel anything.
I like
for him
a lot.
so
that's fair.
As you can see, it's very varied. Like, people have a lot of opinions, and like everybody, the way everyone feels about each individual member of Organization 13 is wildly different, except for Axel, who everyone loves.
I know. I was like, when I was first playing Kingdom Hearts 2, I told my friend, I was like, I love Axel. And they were actually kind of mean. They were like, yeah, join the club, everyone.
Oh, fuck.
I was like, oh,
you're not special, Beth.
I was like, I love a bad boy with a heart of gold. And they were like, okay, cool. Everyone does.
He's very anime. He's extremely, anime. Extremely anime.
So, top ships for AO3, God bless them for having an organization system. I feel like the top four are really the most important. And it's Riku and Sora with a bullet.
And by the way, I love this list because it has Riku/Sora, and then another one that is Riku ampersand Sora.
We gotta explore their friendship too. We can't just leave it romantic. I have never seen a friendship tag be in the top 10 relationships for
a
fandom.
Me either.
I mean, their relationship is like so central to these
games.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. I mean, it's the freaking like impetus for Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yeah.
Kyrie,
I
can
guess
just
she's
go
here. Like
over here.
And Kyrie was there. So Riku, Sora, and then almost 1,000 fix less is Axel and Roxas. And then Kyrie and Sora, and then Aisa and Lee, who are Sykes and Axel's
somebody's
human people.
Term for them.
Yeah, somebody's. That's right. That's I hate this game series. Other notable ones are Vanitas and Ventus. And Aqua and Terra.
Weird,
and
if you ask me.
Cloud and Leon, excuse me.
Yes.
No!
Oh, it's very popular. Are you not familiar with Strifeheart?
It was super popular on fanfiction.net.
Nobody tell David Boreanaz, he'll pop a fucking blood vessel.
Oh, well, you know, as long as there's Spangle. So Soriku is the most popular one on AO3. It is by far second place on fanfiction.net. As far as I could find, and as we've said, I feel like multiple times at this point, fanfiction.net did go through a purge in 2013? 2014? I don't remember. It did go through a purge.
Lest we forget.
Rest in pieces. Where all of the explicit fics were just erased. They were all deleted. So there, and a lot of people have deleted their accounts. A lot of, you know, people have taken fics that they were embarrassed about down. There really is no real way to, like, get it at the, like, when the fandom was, like, hopping back in the day, unfortunately, there's no real way to figure out how popular a ship was. But,
yeah,
right now, in 2020, Akuroku, which is Axel and Roxas, has 5.7 thousand fics to Soriku's 1.2 thousand.
Jesus Christ.
It's a pretty wide margin. I wish I could find out if that was the most popular ship for Kingdom Hearts. Unfortunately, fanfiction.net is garbage and doesn't let you find that out. Soriku... is Sora and Riku, duh. It's kind of like the obvious ship in the game if you're really into fandom, I feel. Because it's...
There's a whole game about Soriku, and it's not even just... Literally,
yeah. Dream Drop Distance is just Soriku the game.
They really went hard with that.
It's a really cute... It as much as I don't super love the gameplay in that game... It is a very cute story.
Yeah, I mean, it's just basically about how their connection is so strong and they have to, like, find each... It's very sweet. Like, you know, they're best friends. They rely on each other. They admire each other. They've had some trials. You know, Kingdom Hearts 1 was hard on both of them.
Riku was evil for Riku a was while. Evil.
Sora had to stab himself in the heart. So this was pretty big from the jump, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Even in the early 2000s where, like, gay fic was, like, tagged to the heavens. Like, don't like, don't read. You know, this has yaoi. This has BL, which is boy love.
Boy, times were so different.
Right? You know, and where you essentially had to, like... you know, protect yourself against the angry comments, and even then the angry comments might still come. I would say, I mean, like, from my viewpoint, it's a pretty relatively, like, inoffensive ship as far as most people go if they're not homophobic. A lot of the fics do play into Kairi hate. But I feel like that's less specific to the fandom and more specific to the mid-2000s.
Yeah, I definitely
that's
think
gamers,
that got
baby.
Us. Like, I feel like if you popped open AO3 right now and read, like, a Soriku fic written in the last 3 years, it probably wouldn't be as bad as something that you could find
I did read a fic that was Akuroku and Soriku, and it was written in 2012, and I still kind of was like, yikes! Like, Kairi, I mean, like, they treated Kairi fine, but there was still some, like, there was a smack, like, some smattering of misogyny and, you know, fetishization of gay men, which is fun. So that was the big one. There's not really much to say about it. I feel like it's just it makes sense. It will never happen
it's
in
a nice,
the game.
Wholesome shit. No, never.
So that's fun.
Compulsory heterosexuality for all.
Yeah, I mean, like, see, even in the game, like, they're trying to push Sora and Kairi so hard, but I'm just like, they're obviously just like, I'm trying to be objective. They just seem super, super close. Like, they just seem like really good friends. Because by the most recent game, they're 17 and Riku is 18. And I'm like, okay, so you all have hormones, right? You all, like, you know, So, in any case,
nobody fucks in Kingdom Hearts. Fucks.
That's not true. Have you met Demix? sorry. Sora and Kairi is also a really big ship. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I just, like, personally, I don't.
Yeah. See, that was like my main problem with Kingdom Hearts 3 is that I really felt like they were like, wait a minute, you guys, like,
they were okay, pushing so it so hard.
I don't know. Here's the thing with queer baiting. I never know if, like, a creator is aware of the fandom or the ships that are popular or whatever. I don't actually know that. But with certain fandoms, it seems sort of, like, pointed almost when, like, a new installment of something comes out. Yeah. That, like, they became aware of this, like, really big contingent of people shipping these two male characters together. And they were like, whoa, hold up. Gotta put the brakes on that. Let's shove some heterosexuality into this game because we can't have that.
Yeah, it's really weird, and like it. I mean, like, not to get too deep into like the story of the game itself, but I feel like a lot of it just robs Kairi of her personhood even more. Yes. Like
that was the other problem I had with Kingdom Hearts 3. Like, yeah, you thought you really could just give her a keyblade, and
she's
I would be
so
happy,
sidelined.
Exactly. I was like, dude, like, seriously, we had two scenes and they were like, I like that they're developing her friendship with Axel. I think that's super cool.
Oh, I love that. I had read a lot of, like, fan fictions with that in it, and it was great.
I
can see them being great friends easily.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, everyone loves Axel, even in the game. Like, he's just he's a gregarious character that is extraordinarily
so
charming.
I mean, he might have kidnapped her, but like, that's water under the bridge.
Yeah, clearly she's let it go. She was like, oh, you were sad about Roxas? I get it.
Hey, speaking of Axel and Roxas.
Speaking of Axel and Roxas.
Let's get into it.
Akuroku is it's a combination of their Japanese names. I remember being very confused. I was like, what is their ship name? I can't find anything anywhere. And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, they're best friends who are kind of figuring out how to exist as real people together because they're both nobodies. Axel taught Roxas what friendship was. I mean, he literally taught him the word friend. And Roxas...
Wow.
Roxas taught Axel what it felt like to have a heart. A direct quote from Kingdom Hearts 2. This began in Kingdom Hearts 2. Super doubled down in 358 Days Over 2. Has only gotten bigger from there. Really, the big thing about this, the big thing about Akuroku, okay. So Kingdom Hearts 2 comes out in 2005. And Axel and Roxas clearly have some kind of connection. They're clearly really, like, they're friends. Like, Axel calls him his best friend, and he says...
What's funny is that the game tries to play Axel as a villain for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, it's so paper thin.
Yeah, yeah. That Patrick tried to convince me that Axel was a bad guy. I was like, get the fuck out of here. There is no way. I was like, I have seen too many redemption arcs.
This fucking goober? Are you kidding?
You think he could do anything? So when Kingdom Hearts 2 comes out, we don't know how old Axel is. We know how old Sora or Roxas is because he's Sora's nobody. And I guess nobodies are generally just like the exact same age as their person, as their somebody.
Would it be charitable to describe a nobody as like a weird clone?
Yeah, sure.
But
pretty
not
much.
Quite.
But like Roxas is super unique, so.
Yeah, like a very strange twin. So that was in 2005. Birth by Sleep came out in 2010. 5 years later, people have had 5 years to ship this because I think 358 Days Over 2 came out in 2009. So
yeah.
4 years, and then you got like Akuroku the game, which is which is days, and the ship like really gets big, and then a year later, Birth by Sleep comes out. Birth by Sleep takes place 10 years before Kingdom Hearts because it's about these other three people who are Keyblade wielders and they're awesome and my children and I love them. In that game, Aqua runs into Lee and his friend Isa, who are Axel and Saix, and you don't know how old they are. They're acting like they're teenagers. And they are kind of dressed, they kind of look like they're teenagers, like young teenagers. Like, I would estimate between 14 and 17, which is a solid 10 plus years older than Roxas. So when that came out, and when that was, like, canonized, this frustrated a lot of Akuroku shippers. Because they're like, okay, I wasn't shipping this with the knowledge that Axel is 10 years older than him. And other people were like, who cares? I've been shipping this for 5 years. I ain't gonna stop now. Some people jumped ship and went to Axel and Saix, which is fine. They also kind of pushed that as well. Who cares? but, I mean, dude, even to this day, like, literally, this is, and this is getting into another thing that's not as fun to talk about, which, so some people like to call Akuroku shippers pedophiles, and the ship is pedophilic, because Axel is canonically at least 10 years older than Roxas.
Oh boy.
Sorry,
my audio which cut, is my fun. Internet cut out, rather. We're talking about the discourse, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, you haven't missed anything fun. Nope. I went into the anti-Akuroku tag to try and find, like, arguments and stuff, and it was bad. And it was not a bad, it was not a good time, and I'm
sorry that you had to do that, because, yeah, it's a mess. I lived with, like, this weird, like, transition that period, because when I first got into the Kingdom Hearts fandom in, like, 2014, 2015, like, people were still, like, pretty okay with shipping Akuroku, and it was just like, you know, okay, you either shipped that or Suriku or both, and it was fine. And then there was this weird, like, shift, and I don't even... When did Birth by Sleep come out, did you say?
2010.
Okay, so it had nothing to do with that. It was just this weird thing, this mentality that switch that happened in fandom, but, like, suddenly everybody was, like, very mad about people shipping Axel and Roxas, and, like, you weren't allowed to do it anymore, and if you did, then you were a pedophile or a pedophile apologist, and it was just, like, no fun allowed anymore. You can only ship Suriku or Sora and Kairi, or if you want to ship Axel with somebody, it has to be Saix or Isa.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to get too deeply into this, but if you ask me, it's a whole different kettle of fish if we're talking about fiction versus real life. Not only because these people are not real living human beings, but also because, like, it's a little bit arbitrary, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, this, not only are they not real human beings, there's a context to the idea of a 17-year-old dating a 27-year-old in real life that is horrifying, that doesn't necessarily exist in Kingdom Hearts.
And also, there's, like, even conflicting lore about, like, nobodies and whatever, because, like, Nomura's said a couple times that nobodies don't age, so, okay, Axel might technically, like, mentally be 10 years older than Roxas, but, like, he also might not, because...
He was turned into a nobody, like, when, I believe when Birth by Sleep happened.
Right.
It's like the episode of Community where Subway becomes a person and they're like, so can you drive? And he's like, no, well, technically I'm only 2 weeks old.
Yeah. I am a baby. Yeah, like...
I've seen people say that about Roxas, too. That, like, he's, like, an infant because he had just been created, like...
Like, when days...
Yeah.
All of his memories are implanted, right?
He's a, like, literal infant, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, and so that's... So that's another thing, right? Is, like, okay, cool. This is a video game series where people... where these two people are clones and they don't have
kind of
hearts. And like, it's just, it's mind blowing to me. The mental, and this is, I mean, like, this is, with a lot of people who like to make this argument, it's mind blowing to me the mental gymnastics you have to go to like call another human being a pedophile for shipping something like this. Like it's very hurtful.
It's a very uncharitable read. It's like an extremely uncharitable.
It's hurtful. It doesn't really add anything to discussions about child sexual abuse. It doesn't add anything to fandom in general. It's just, it's hurtful, yeah, and it can actually like harm people's mental well-being.
And their livelihoods.
That's my soapbox. Yes, and their livelihoods if you want to like email their job or tweet their... If
you're like telling tales out of school about what this person does in their fandom life.
So that's, nobody needs that's my to know soapbox. That.
Keep that in your heart. You know?
I think Akuroku is a really fun ship. I think that the character dynamics are super intriguing, honestly.
Their relationship is powerful.
Play Kingdom Hearts 3, and when Axel says, like, when Axel sees Roxas for the first time, like, tell me the look on his face is not like, finally I found you, like, the love... Anyway, I'm getting into personal... listen! I feel so deeply
this is
about these people.
Akuroku podcast now.
Yeah, kicking all of you off, and this is now my fic rec list. So
there's some stuff that I really want to talk about.
Ooh, okay, go for it.
Because something I mentioned earlier in this is that the voice casting for Kingdom Hearts, in my opinion, changed the way video game voice casting worked, because this was the first video game I was aware of to use like film and TV celebrities for its voice cast. Up until this point, there was like your stable of anime and video game voiceover actors. You know the folks like Tress McNell and Dee Bradley Baker and that dipshit who's
name, I was gonna say anyone. And him
and that guy. But this was the first game that I remember where you had people who were like the cast was a selling point.
Yeah.
And the first game came out in 2002. Fucking Haley Joel Osment has played Sora for longer than he has. It's his longest and easily most lucrative role to this date. And he grew up. He went through puberty playing this character. Yeah. And if you don't recognize that name, that's I See Dead People. That's who Haley Joel Osment was. And like then, in addition to that, they brought in some people who were like big at the time, and was kind of unbelievable. I already mentioned David Boreanaz as Squall Leon Hart, which is unbelievable to me. Like that they were able to get that. But it didn't stop there, because the first game had Mandy Moore as Aerith Gainsborough, Christy Carlson Romano, who I promise was famous at the time.
She was huge.
And then it didn't stop. Oh my God. And the one that I imagine this guy is kicking himself because he didn't reprise the role in later games, Billy Zane, who you may recognize from Titanic.
Yep.
One of the biggest movies of all time, who also is the Twin Peaks connection, just so y'all know. Billy Zane was Ansem, Seeker of Darkness in the Kingdom Hearts 1, and then declined to return, despite the fact that he could have been making ridiculous Disney money from every game thereafter.
For the rest of his life.
But there is one that I want to talk about that I didn't see until just now. I'm on Behind the Voice Actors, which is a great, great place to go to look at voice casts.
Yes.
Tara Ventus and Aqua in Birth Thistle.
They got some,
They got some star power there. Not only Jesse McCartney returning to play Roxas and Ventus, because they are connected. This person, Willa Holland, I'm sure she's quite famous.
She is. She plays Aqua. Oliver Queen's little sister in Arrow.
Okay. So that's huge. Yeah. But the voice actor for Tara, this is sending me to another plane of existence because I did not know this connection existed is Jason Doring, who played Logan Eccles on Veronica Mars.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm losing my mind right now because of this, and I didn't even recognize it. And of course, like the other major star power that they brought for Birth by Sleep is the indomitable, the unconquerable
Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill as Ericus, and
which do you know? Sorry.
And phoning it in from another fucking planet, could not be bothered to care about the script at all in his final days on this earth. Leonard Nimoy as
they
Master
could not
Xehanort.
Replace him. The voice acting after him was just like not
Xehanort's voice act. Like, okay, so first off, y'all, I don't know if you know this, in Remind they recast him again with Christopher Lloyd.
Jesus Christ. Christopher Lloyd was Diz,
yeah,
in
right
Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah.
He was the intermediary step between like Ansem and Xehanort, the researcher whose identity Xehanort stole,
yes,
when he decided to.
Oh,
time
there's
travel.
Another really
Isn't
cool
fun?
Voice actor thing. Mm-hmm. Lance Bass voices Sephiroth in the first game.
Lance, I want that tattooed on my face. Lance,
like
Bass,
Lance
Bass as the voice of Sephiroth
in Kingdom Hearts 1.
And
happy Pride
have, like,
Month, everyone.
Didn't he have like one line that wasn't just a combat bark?
Well, there was like a cutscene to trigger his fight, so I'm sure that was like the extent of his duties.
Oh my gosh. It's so,
so anyway,
good.
Yeah,
that's all
it's
I had.
So good. And like most of these people, it's wild. Like I said, I think Jesse McCartney does a really good job as both Roxas and Ventus and Vanitas.
Yes.
No, Vanitas,
yeah,
is Haley Joel.
Yeah,
Osment.
He different. Well, but there's something to be said there too, because despite the fact that Vanitas and Sora have a very deep connection, Haley Joel Osment does a pretty darn good job differentiating,
so too, yeah,
the voice.
Yeah, I've always liked
I think they all. I'm a pretty big fan of like the voice. That was one of the complaints about Shion, is that Alison Stoner's voice, and I was like, as if Riku is so emotive, like like y'all are really cherry picking here, you're really picking your battles, because like come on.
And again, Leonard Nimoy phoned it in so fucking hard as Xehanort in Birth by Sleep.
If y'all can watch the Remind, it is bonkers to see Christopher Lloyd, like see Doc, what's his name in freaking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking Christopher Lee. Sir Christopher Lee, who played Saruman the Grey.
I'm talking about Doc Brown.
He was
I'm
Diz.
Talking about Doc Brown.
That's funny as hell.
And like, as soon as he opens his mouth, you're like, come on, y'all. Like, you cannot fool me. You cannot pull the wool over my eyes. I have played any video game in the last 20 years. Anyway, that's Kingdom Hearts. It is bonkers.
It's Kingdom Hearts.
We kind of, I was going to say, we stayed on topic, but we also kind of went all over the place, which I feel like is very apt. So. I love Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Great job.
Thanks. Good job, everybody.
Thanks.
Akuroku writes. I'll cut that out. All right. So.
I hope I did okay.
We're online. We're online on places. We are on Twitter at FanandBallPod. And if you want to email us, I believe it's the same thing. I think it's just FanandBallPod@gmail.com. It's either that or just FanandBall@gmail.com. I can't remember.
Share with us your fandom stories.
Please.
From Kingdom Hearts. Maybe we can share
Send
them on
friends.
The next episode. I would love
you.
To.
Kieran, you didn't even mention Zemix.
Oh, God! How could I forget?
Zexion and Demix.
Yeah, the really weird ship that didn't have any sort of canon basis until literally the last game. They
they interact quite a lot.
In Kingdom Hearts
in
3?
The last game.
Oh
yeah,
yeah believe
yeah.
me, I know. I
I have those cutscenes
yeah.
bookmarked.
No, when the trailers came out and like or well, I guess when the game came out, like I was excited first of all that Demix was even alive, because that was just I was out of the fandom at that point. And then someone was like, all of my friends knew that I was super obsessed with Demix, and they just like were adding me like on Twitter, like, oh my God, Kieran, like he's alive. You got to come back. And
Kieran,
then, yeah,
Kieran.
I can't with my shit. So anyway, Zemix is a really weird ship that didn't have any sort of canon basis, and I'm not really sure why people started shipping them. I think it actually might have been a joke, because Demix's number is 9, and Zexion's is 6.
Oh no!
So
yes,
no.
Yes!
I think that might have been why people started shipping them.
Best ship.
But I genuinely like their dynamic.
That has done more for my opinion of the Kingdom Hearts fandom than the whole rest of this podcast.
That is the best thing.
God bless the Kingdom Hearts fandom.
I had not even thought of that.
I don't know if that's actually true, but like, I think it might have been, because that seems like a very early 2000s, like what if we took 6 and what if we took 9 and what if we made them gay? Because 69 is the gay number.
Oh man.
Organization 13 members, I have to know this. Okay.
Organization 69.
Okay, so let me see.
Kieran, would you like our fans to find you on the internet?
Sure. I don't really do a whole lot
on
my Twitter.
You don't have to.
I mean,
I
don't really talk about Kingdom Hearts, so if you're looking for that, don't follow me on Twitter. But
don't. If you're looking for that, good luck.
But anyway, my Twitter is Stereo Lights with 2 S's at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Stereo Lights. Because
Stereo Lights is taken by some weird Russian audio company.
I have good news. It is in fact Zexion is number 6 and Demix is number 9. I love this. This
yes.
is automatically my new favorite ship.
It's a good ship. Like, when people write their dynamic well, it's like, because people had to do a lot of interpretation with that, like some artistic liberties, because again, they didn't interact until Kingdom Hearts 3. And there was like some, a lot of, there's also mangas of Kingdom Hearts that people take a lot of,
Yeah, right?
What?
I was saying yes. I was just affirming
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so there's like only one scene of them in that too. They play Twister anyway in that scene. So
oh my god,
the horniest
yeah,
horror
the gayest game.
Game.
So so that's what I had to live on.
I love that.
I lived on scraps for years.
I'm obsessed. I'm about to read. I've got the AO3 tab pulled up right now. I'm about to have me
okay,
at
well,
night.
If you find anything good, please let me know, because it's been a while.
Okay, I will. It's been a second. I am.
We're part of the Scavengers Network.
We are
network.
Part of this. Regrettably, the Scavengers Network did decide that we were worthy. So, we've got so many good shows. Max, what are some of your favorites?
Yeah. I have always had a soft place in my heart for WIDK, which as a concept is so funny to me.
I was just about to say, like, what a brilliant concept for a podcast.
It's a fake morning radio show.
Yes.
I absolutely love
that. It's so funny. And the people are just, like, delightful. I love them all very much.
Not to mention the main host, Fishstick, is the like major editor producer for Scavengers Network, and I fancy myself pretty good at audio production, but Mason makes me look like a
Mason's
baby.
Incredible.
Yeah, so huge shout out to WIDK. Not to play favorites or anything, but like it's a great
yeah,
show.
Yeah, for real. I am a big fan of Unnatural 20s. I'm a big fan of like most shows.
They are so
most
funny.
Shows on the network, but Unnatural 20s is so good.
I would love to be, I know this is like just putting this, this is my, the secret. I would love to be a guest on Unnatural 20.
Hey, Caitlin and Cassie.
Caitlin, look me up, please.
And I am online at, Beth Eleanor on Twitter. I don't tweet much about Kingdom Hearts these days, but that'll probably change soon because I'm remembering
yep.
how much I love it.
I just got a PlayStation 4, so
yeah.
that's where I'm most active social network-wise.
Oh my gosh, add him on the PSN, whatever, PSN?
Add me on PSN, it's 1-4-all_1990.
Good lord. And that's our show, folks. That's what, we did Kingdom Hearts.
We did it. Good job, guys.
Got it memorized?
Memorized? God.
I held off. I didn't say it until the very end.
God. I love these games. Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Okay. Bye.
The Scavengers Network.
Creator-driven,
community-focused,
treasured content.
Hey, little mama, let me whisper in your ear and tell you about the comedy podcast Unnatural 20s.
Do we really want to limit ourselves to just saying we're only a comedy podcast? You're right, we have a lot to offer, like intellectual conversations. Well, did you guys know Australia once lost a war entirely to emus? Do you think emus frown upside down because they're in Australia?
Like they're below the equator?
Yeah, duh.
Health and fitness.
Pasta is great, but you usually have a lot of extras. But have no fear. Thigh-warmed pasta is here. Plop the bag of leftover pasta on your thighs and eat those puppies like popcorn!
We have microwaves.
I have thighs!
You know what? Actually, we can never decide what we're going to talk about, and that's why we leave the fate of each episode up to the rolls of a D20. So download Unnatural 20s on your favorite podcast app and roll with us every Monday.